Ok,
should we start? As I was saying in the, at the very beginning of the course, we have a couple of lectures. The last time we talked about technology, technology assessment, and how to choose technologies. Today we'll talk about innovation and innovativeness. So those are the two tasks, the two objectives of this course. Is for you to get to experience new technologies, how to choose them in a structured way, and also how to push yourself in terms of coming up with innovative ideas. So talk a little bit about it. If you go to Blackboard, you'll find that besides the lecture slides and the video that we record here, you'll find that I put up three documents. I suggest you read them. They are not mandatory in the sense that I will not question you in the exam about these things. So, but this is about innovation and innovativeness, and it's a good idea to consult it when you work to see if you can get some ideas as to how to push yourself in terms of being innovative. There's much more to innovation. Have you had any courses on innovation before? You had it. Okay, then you can supplement and add to what I'm saying, and then we can make this into a discussion on innovation. It's a big field, and it's more than just coming up with creative ideas. So I'll give you kind of a framework for what are all the issues that might be relevant, and we'll just touch in some of them. Some of the parts of that framework, and then the Jung framework is one of the papers that you can read to go in more detail. So we'll talk a little bit about the process, a little bit about what you call dimensions of innovation. I mean, what type of innovations can you make? We'll look at how can we assess the results, because this is interesting. So we had was part of a project a few years back. We went to graphical arts industry and asked about the innovation experience. And they had lots of innovation projects. And when we asked them whether they were successful or not, they couldn't really answer, because it's hard to measure. It's hard to say, is this innovation process successful? So we'll talk a little bit of how you can do that. And we talk about success factors. What do we know would contribute, and what do we know would inhibit innovation processes? Again, we're just going to be quite touching the surface, and I hope that you will, in your teams, create some of the climate for being innovative, that you will look at how you can push yourself into coming up with better innovative ideas. And then, towards the end, which is really the most important part of this, is how can we assess innovativeness? Because that's what we ask you to do. I mean, everything else would be like in the technology part, the actual project and the innovative ideas is not the ultimate goal itself. The goal is for you to have experience with the process and reflect on the process and reflect on the innovativeness. And so it's more on the meta level, but that's the learning outcome. So, what is innovation? You had innovation before. How would you define an innovation? Something new. So how is then innovation different from invention? Because invention is also something new.
I think it could be also some new way to utilize thing that it was used to some other purpose.
It's a new way to utilize something that you have for another purpose. Then you're touching into it, because there is a difference between innovation and invention. Invention is all new. But if you look one definition of innovation, it is ideas, practices, objects which are new to the organization. So exactly. It could have been used before. Others may have used it, but it's new for you in this context. It's new. So invention is something that you can get a patent, because it's not, no one has done this way before. You could say that many patents are also innovations, because they are kind of ideas used in different fields, but you adapt them and you modify and you adapt it to a new field, and there it can be an invention. But the important thing here is new to the organization and to the relevant environment. So it means that when we ask you to be innovative, it doesn't mean that you have to come up with ideas that no one has done before. But the purpose is to come up with a way to solve that this organization has not solved it before. Or typically in our case, you use ideas from other products or other areas and you set them in a new context. And then you can say it innovative. And then, of course, inventions are also innovations, but those are really the great innovations. And then you have most innovations, as we'll look at it towards the end of the day, most innovations are small, incremental. Typically, they are small improvements that you make along the way. So this is the framework that we're going to be covering. So we'll talk about the innovation process, the dimensions, meaning what innovation results or what you can innovate, and then how to measure results. And we'll look at some of the success factors and external conditions, because innovations happen in a context, happens in an environment, and we have to look at the environment. But we'll start with the process. And I have papers for these students. So the Jung paper describes this, and then outcome-driven innovation. There is a researcher called Ulvik, and the paper is on Blackboard. So I suggest you read it. It's quite interesting. It has some good examples of innovations and how companies have been doing this. And it's about how can you turn user input into innovation. So we'll touch a little bit upon it, and then the idea of open innovation. we'll talk about the characteristics of an open innovation and why we may want to be open. The process. So, in innovation, what do you say was the typical process? How do you get into an innovation process? What are the characteristics of an innovation process? Or anyone had in a Yeah, so there is this trying to frame the problem and trying to find solutions, trying to see what others have been doing. Yeah, and then the proof of the pudding is in the eating, then you have to make something. So typically you have the two stages. You have the search stage, as you describe it, the stage where you try to find what's been done, what's out there, what's the problem really like, and then you have to implement. And typically these are kind of iterative processes. So this is how Jung describes it in their framework, saying, okay, you sit down and you have some ideas. Then you screen your ideas. And you screen saying, can we do it? Is the technology ready? Do we have the proper personnel to do this? And if not, okay, we go back and generate some new ideas. Eventually, we have some ideas that we think they are doable, we think we have the people, we have the technology, then we do a commercial evaluation. Because innovation is not about getting the ideas. Innovation is about earn money from the ideas or improve. It doesn't have to be earning money. We'll talk about what the objective will be. But it could be to improve something, to reduce the costs or to make your customers happy, to make your customers more loyal to you, whatever. But before we go into implement, besides screening it for whether it's doable, screening it whether it's something that we like to do and we are set up to do, we want to see, do we think it will be a success in the market? And here is where we would like to define what are the success criteria. Because in all these projects, we would like to know by the end whether it was a success or not. And to know whether it's a success or not, we need to know what to measure against. And that's typically what we set up here. Say, okay, what we want to do is to improve customer retention or improve sales or reduce costs or have more our brand better known, whatever the objective would be. We could set it up here. And then the implementation stage is also quite iterative. So we try to develop, and you know from the applied computer science project that this is typically start with minimal viable product, and you test ideas, and you talk to customers, test it, and then you develop, and you test, and you develop, and at some point you launch, and launch and testing is maybe kind of one and the same thing. So it's not like when you have products. You have either a yearly release or 2 year releases. Every 2 years, you have a new version of your physical product. But in services, here, these are digital. You test, and when you get feedback, you make a bug fix, and you roll out a new system on your servers. You don't have to have these fixed release cycles. It could be more dynamic. What could be said, though, is that this is kind of many cases overstructuring, because in many companies and even in your project, it may not be these two stages. You may go back and forth and jump from here and back to new ideas. From launching, you have some new ideas and you go back and forth. So it can be less structured than what this is trying to depict. Even though you can see there are quite a lot of cycles already here, it can be even more dynamic. So that's kind of the overall. Now, the Ulvik paper, I like it. I think you should read it. And it's quite interesting, because what he's pointing to is that if you ask a customer, many companies have asked customers, so what do you want in the next release of the product? And they list features. And he has looked at many of these companies. That's not a very successful innovation process, because what they release in the next version, the customers aren't happy about it anyway. Even if they ask the customer, what do you want? And if they make it, the customer's not going to buy it in many cases. So, and two problems. Number one is that customers can only know what they've already seen. So typically, one of your competitors have a feature, and you try to catch up. If you ask the customer, they will say that, okay, these guys have it, so you should have it as well. That's the frame of thinking. And it doesn't take price into account. So when you ask customer a new feature, they will think of everything, but they don't think about, okay, how much am I willing to pay for this? And typically, you work in incremental steps. So read the Ulrich paper. We have a couple of very good examples on how this can go wrong for companies. Yeah, they have this need too. And also the fact that if you ask, you can't ask every user, so you ask lead users, and what they tell you may not be what the most customers will be willing to pay for. So there are a number of problems related to asking customers, what should we do in the next? And they're typically not willing to pay for all that. So what he is suggesting is to try to say, okay, now, don't ask these customers about for new features, because customers aren't innovators. Ask the customer, try to understand what they try to accomplish. So that's why they said outcome-driven. What is the outcome that the customer is involved in? So the one example he's explaining is this personal watercraft. You ride around on the water jets. On the sea, Kawasaki used to be the leading manufacturer, and at that time you had a platform where you were standing. That's the only choice. And they asked customers, so what should we do in the next release? And the customer said, well, you know, it's quite tiring to stand up there, so we should have an improved platform. So they designed an even better platform. Now some of the competitors realized that it's not about good platform, it's about a good riding position. So they put in this sitting bench, so you could sit down, and you can raise up, and you could sit down. Kawasaki didn't have that, because they asked the customers, and the customers asked for better platforms, not for anything completely different, namely sitting down and raising up. So when their competitors added the bench, or the seat where you could sit down, all of a sudden they had made that leap that Kawasaki didn't make, because they were just asking the customers. So what the problem didn't understand that the outcome that the customer was seeking was a good riding position, not a good standing position. So they didn't go beyond what they what they could foresee, because I've never seen a jet ski with or watercraft with a seat before. So try to understand what is the outcome, what is the customer trying to achieve, and then use your own developers to innovate solutions to jump beyond what the customer can see, what the customer can think of, because probably we have the smarter people. We hire the smarter people. Customers are not the ones that can innovate on our behalf. So, and he's suggesting a pretty large process in where you try to figure out what customers would like to. You try to organize this, try to rate this. But this is the part that I think is most important, because this is where it links to the willingness to pay. So typically, when we innovate, we can ask customers satisfaction. So how satisfied are you with the product or with our current product? And you can go through the number of features and how good is the project in helping you? How good is your riding position, if you use that jet ski example? And they will say, oh, not so good or good. So you can say, okay, somewhere here, we say, if satisfaction is low, this is where we should improve. Now, what is the problem in doing this way?
When it's high, you don't want to improve anymore.
Sorry?
When the satisfaction is high, you don't want to improve.
Yeah, so this one you don't want. But I mean, yeah, that could be fine. I mean, if customers are happy with this, then you don't have to necessarily improve. That's not necessarily a problem. The problem is... it could be, yeah. But it could also be that... They aren't satisfied with the riding position, so you can come up with new ideas. The problem is that these aren't all equally important to the customers. So if you say importance, how important is this problem for me? So here, the customers aren't happy, but it's not important to them. So why bother? If you spend lots of resources on solving this, customers are probably not going to pay anyway because it's not important. But if it's important up here, then they're willing to pay. So you ask for how satisfied they are and how important it is for them. So here, if you find that they are quite satisfied, but it's not important, then maybe we should spend the resources over there instead. This is not very, at least in teaching, it's not a common way of thinking. So if students are happy about something, if you're satisfied with something and unsatisfied with something else, could we reduce the quality? Could we give you poorer quality on something to have more resources to improve what's important to you? I mean, we don't think in those terms. We tend to say, okay, we should satisfy everything. But we have fixed resources. We can usually not do that. So what we should try to do is to spend the money here, where the customer said this, or user said this is important, and I'm not happy with your current solution. That will hopefully better match the features with user willingness to pay. The problem of addressing these ones. Yeah, they are clearly unsatisfied, but it's not important. So they wouldn't care if you say, okay, I fixed it. Now we have to pay 2,000 extra a month. No, it's not that important. You see the point? So think about this, the two axes. That's what I think is the, I mean, everything else is, it has a process which is quite large in interviewing customers and having questionnaires and trying to rank and find all these problems and classify them. I think in your terms, think about not just whether this is something that the customers or users would want, but also how important it is to them. And pick the ones that are more important, because they are more, number one, they will be more happy to have these solved, than this, and they would even be more willing to pay for it. Or go through some hassle of installing a new version of a software or change their practice or whatever. The cost would be, doesn't have to be money, the cost. Open innovation. You know the term open innovation? Heard about it before? No. So what could a closed innovation process be? How is the typical innovation process in companies? Yeah, you try to have non-disclosure agreements and keep it in the company, and you don't tell anyone what you're doing, and you kind of keep it all by yourself. Now, that might be a good process if you are the unique number one and you have all the good ideas and no one else has good ideas. But if you could let others use your ideas, but they would share their ideas with you, so you could add to your product or your portfolio their ideas because they have access to your ideas, then you're opening up and say, okay, now I will not keep everything within. I'm more open. I will accept your ideas. I will share my ideas. You will share it with the customers. So it's not like you just keep it within the company. You share with customers. You share maybe with competitors. I don't know if you heard the term co-opetition, which is kind of collaboration and competition. So you could cooperate, collaborate with the companies, but you could also compete with them in certain scenes. So in areas, in markets, for instance, where you don't compete, you could be friends and play together. And then in other markets, you could be competitors. So there are more dynamic processes. So because it's very unlikely that you can hire all the smart people in the world and your competitors have non-smart people. So trying to work with the other and trying to say, okay, how can, if a company has great ideas, how can I get access to their ideas? You need to trade something. So if you trade your ideas with another company and you share and you get access to their ideas. So that's the whole thinking here. You open up and to get access to some of the other good ideas, you need to share as well. It's a sharing economy. And the idea is that we don't necessarily have to create the idea to profit from it. So if we could team up with somebody else and sell their ideas, they get money for their ideas, but we can add value to it, and it adds value to our products. So we get more out of it than just trying to innovate everything ourselves. And the thinking is that the best you could do is to combine external ideas and internal ideas, not just trying to solve everything yourself. But you have to kind of identify what is your core competency and where can you really contribute, and then try to team up and merge up with others for the rest. Yeah, and you just trade. You don't have to say, okay, I need patents and everything. You just find ways to collaborate. So that was very quickly into the process. I suggest you read these papers in more detail and try to see and think about how would you want to work. We would hope that you, every 2 weeks when we meet, you will have been through some of that screening, some of that evaluation, thinking about what are the customers. So in our sense, if you go back here to this model, so ideas and screening, because I mean, we have limitations here. You are two or three or whatever in the team. We have just one semester. And technology may not be ready, so you need to screen the ideas. And the commercial evaluation here would be, you should think about who would be the users. And what difference would this make to these users you have in mind? Although you don't have, I guess most of you at least, don't have a company. And the idea you bring up here is not gonna be a commercial product. But think of the commercial evaluation still as the step where you think about the usefulness, where you think about what is the outcome that we are addressing? What would the users want to do? What are the results the users try to get to? And how would our or your idea support that? And then implementation stage, this is where you need to develop, and in that you need to consider technologies, assess and choose the technologies, and you need to test, and launching in this case is going to be, maybe you have some test users, but they're not going to come to the launch phase. We're going to mostly be here in development and testing. So that's how I see these things happening. And open innovation, we are going to meet here. So hopefully you share your ideas, and we share ideas. And if you have a user group in mind, bring the users into the process, talk to them, try to understand what where they are at, let them contribute their ideas, test some of their ideas as well. And then next is, what are the dimensions? So what can you come up with? What are the innovations? I mean, the obvious thing is a new service concept. You have a new idea. You have a service that's not been offered before, or you have a new feature. Your service is supporting something that has not been there before. Let's say in the educational setting, you offer, let's say, an interactive tutorial for Python programming with feedback. No, it's not there. Or maybe it's maybe you see that there is something for C++, not for Python, and it's not very motivating. It's boring, and you would like to add some motivating features. So that's typically the service concept. But it may also be just the interface to the customer. So today, a lot of these services are web-based services. So it has a web page API. But why not provide your API as a new service? So the customers can program their own tools and use a standard API. So rather than and this is what in the web services world. So if you, for instance, look at weather forecasting. So there are a couple of weather forecasters in Norway. And of course, you could go there. You could go to Yr or to Storm and see what the weather looks like. But if you are a newspaper, you can buy their service. So you can integrate their weather forecasting service into your own product. So the client interface is not just the weather forecast as a web page, but it's also a service that you can call yourself using an API, programmer API. So so sometimes the innovation is how, it's not in the concept, it's not how the service works, but how the customer get to there. Sometimes technology. So you deliver this new technology. So you have VR instead of 2D or 3D screens. So it's the service maybe is pretty much as it was before, but it's more immersive because now you are in the VR world. It's interesting that technology, innovation doesn't require technology necessarily. But technology is a great enabler. So we are lucky. We know technology. We can use technology, we understand technology, and which makes us makes it easy for us to come up with especially service innovations. There may be lots of people out there with good ideas about new services, but they have no programming skills, they have no IT skills, which makes it harder for them to actually implement the prototype. So we may not have the best ideas. They have great ideas, but don't understand technology. So sometimes, again, working with these smart, creative minds as a team in which we implement some of their ideas. But don't think that technology is always a necessity. Sometimes it's about coordinating processes. Sometimes it's about getting a different way of thinking about it. But many times it is technology. So think about banking. So if you went some, it's before your time, but if you went quite a few years back, you had this problem that you would have to go to the bank in the opening hours. So from 9 to 4, but people were at work. So how did they get the money? They needed to go to the bank. So banks started having opening on Saturdays. What's the problem with that? Well, it's expensive because you need to have a lot of people clerks working in the bank on Saturdays. So what was the solution? ATM machines, mini banks, because they run all the day. And you can go there when it fits you as a customer. You don't have to wait for their opening hours. And when the when they have invested in technology, there is no extra cost. I mean, if they want to keep the mini banks open on Saturday and Sundays, doesn't cost them anything extra because it's there. So once it's there, it's there. So technology is an enabler, but they could still improve on banking services without technologies as well at that time, and they did. And the delivery system, how things are handled, routed internally, how things are delivered. I think in your case, typically it's the service concept, maybe the client interface, and definitely technology will be an element. Delivery system, I don't think we have had many in integration projects. But think about it. Try to open your mind. That's what I'm trying to do with this lecture. Try to don't be too narrow and fixed. Try to open your mind, see around a little bit, and try to think about how could be innovative more than just coming up with a new feature that no one has seen before. Results. How would you, if you were to do an innovation process or a project, what would you say would be the success criteria? Because we would like to know when we do a project. We would like to know, because this is like in the applied computer science project, where you would like to be better at estimation. So how can you do that? Well, you try to come up with your best guess, and at the end, you estimate, you look at the estimates, how far they were off. Because, I mean, if you run a business, you would like to be able to estimate what you can benefit, how much you could put into an innovation project, and what you're going to get out of it. So how would you say you would assess? Yeah. So improving the process, but not necessarily being cutting-edge technology. Yeah, I think what Jung is saying and in this paper, and what I think you should keep in mind is that it may be multifaceted. So don't just think about okay, we're gonna have more customers or more sales, more licenses, because that's one aspect of it. But then it's definitely other aspects. So. If you use kind of a balanced scorecard, I don't know if you are anyone in your family with a balanced scorecard. It's kind of a way to see how well is the company doing. So rather than just looking at the financial output, you could look at some of the other some other parameters as well. And there are typically four perspectives: it's the financial perspective, it's a customer perspective, an internal process perspective, as you were saying, improving internal processes. And it's the innovation and learning perspective. So what's the financial perspective? Well, this is the obvious. Sales, subscriptions, licenses, whatever you can measure. But that's not the only one. So sometimes we innovate, not necessarily to have more sales, but maybe it's to keep customers. So what is our reach? How well known is our product? What is the retention, loyalty? Because, I mean, keeping customers may be an important reason for doing innovation project. Because maybe the market is pretty saturated, so you can't get more sales, but at least you would like to keep the ones that are there and happy and willing to maybe pay even more. And maybe just keeping them is important. So, and how satisfied are customers? Keeping customers satisfied means that they talk positively about the product, which increased in retention and maybe even in the longer run sales. Internal process perspective, as you were saying, it doesn't have to be cutting edge, but you would like to improve it, meaning better utilization, happier employees maybe, reducing the hazards or reducing their how much time they need to work or replacing boring work with more creative work, whatever it could be to make the internal process better. And then, not least, is the learning perspective. So when I was part of this project where we went to the graphical arts companies and asked them about innovation and what they got out of it, they didn't know whether they have improved sales. They had no idea of find that, because they sell and they kept on selling. They couldn't really say what these individual innovation processes meant to retention or loyalty. But they were quite sure that the fact that they had been doing innovation processes meant that they had experience of doing it, and they were more willing to innovate. And their customers would start to see them as an innovative company, and they would like to deal with them just because they were innovative and modern and responsive to the user needs and changes. So sometimes the most important outcome or result of an innovation process is that it helps you innovate. You improve innovation, and you get to experience and also present yourself as an innovative company or person. And innovating companies, they need to be good at adapting to customer needs, because innovation is about turning ideas into something beneficial to the customers. And with that perspective, you will increase customer loyalty, customer perspective, and typically people working in the company, your employees, will be happier because they're feeling they're innovative. They can be creative. They don't just do the regular, standard, boring stuff. So there are. This may have positive side effects on these others as well. So, what you should think of now is when you start a project, think about that in the screening phase, the commercial evaluation. Think of what would you say would be the success criteria for your integration project. So in June, when you put in your report, you say, this was successful because our goals that we defined in February, we reached them this and that way. So think about it now, because if you wait till May to see whether it was successful, you can't really say you will adapt your goals to what happened, not because you had goals. So try to sit down and say, okay, what are... And financially, you don't necessarily have so much financial, but think about customer, internal process, and innovation learning perspective at least. What would that mean to you as a group? And if you were a company, if you were a startup, what would you say would be the success criteria? And then, not just financially. This is the easy thing. You will have more customers. You will have more sales, better revenues. But that's the easy word. Not necessarily easy, but that's the obvious. But these other perspectives might be even more important. Yeah. So the process. You search, find ideas, implement, test, launch. Now, what can the innovations be? We can come up with new services. We can think about the way we present this to the customers. We could have different technology solutions, and the delivery system. We talked about the various types of results. The final part then is the surrounding part. What can have an impact on the innovation? So there are some success criteria related to what they call the company itself, and what they call a supportive climate. We'll talk about them. There are some external conditions, market, what is the knowledge infrastructure, meaning how knowledgeable are users? Because, I mean, some of these products services we come up with, they require skilled users. VR, for instance, it's hard to sell VR if people don't have kind of a VR experience already. If they already have VR experience, it would be easier to have more advanced VR solutions. And there are factors related directly to the company and how you do the innovation process. NSD is new service development. We call it innovation. Any of you done SWOT before? Yeah. Think of doing a lightweight SWAT in your project as well. So why are you doing this project? Because this goes to the external conditions. You try to understand and even the internal, because SWAT is external, the strength and the opportunities. Strengths and threats. Strengths and opportunities are here, and the weaknesses and threats. Yeah, whatever. You have the internal here, strengths and weakness, and external opportunities and threats. So it's kind of combining these internal and these external. So and of course, you don't have a company. You don't know yourself too well. But do a little bit, anyway, do a little bit of what are your strengths and weaknesses. And then look at outside. What are the opportunities and threats for the idea that you bring in? And then think about how can you, in your team, and when we meet here, how can we create a climate that would encourage creativity and innovativeness? Because it's well known that the worst thing you can do when someone comes up with a good idea, we tried that before, doesn't work. We tried it before. It never works. And then if you do that, new ideas will never pop up and will never be able to get through. So it's very much about what is your climate. And there's a paper that I've out there, a research paper that you can look at. I've looked at climate. What are the climates that would support, and what would inhibit? What do we know about that? And you can divide it into three parts. One would be the resources. So to be able to innovate, you need time to come up with new ideas. You need time. So if everybody is, if in the innovation project, if you are too busy doing the other courses, you can't come up with great ideas here. Or if you are, for those who are working, if you work too hard in the company, it can be hard to have enough time, because you need time. But you also need idea support. So, we tried it before, doesn't work here, that's going to kill everything. So you have to say, that sounds like a good idea, but it may need some improvement. How can we improve it? And then you are into a supportive, but trying to improve it, and trying to refine it, because the initial idea is really the best one. So that's why challenge and involvement. So everybody, because when you innovate, you may need to look at the problem from different perspectives. And involvement, so if you have the whole team involved, it means that you have more perspectives, and also, which is important, you have more challenges. Because innovations, the first idea is rarely good enough. So it needs to be challenged, it needs to be improved, it needs to be refined. And for that, you need everybody to push, but in a supportive way. So the reason why you are challenging an idea is not that you're going to kill it, but you would like it to be improved, you would like to refine it. So it's about the resources, but it's also about personal motivation. To be innovative means that you need to be creative, and that only happens in an open and environment where there's trust among yourself. So when you choose a team, try to find somebody that you trust. So you could be open, you could disagree, because you need challenge. So you need to be able to disagree, but in a way that you trust the disagreement. And you know that they disagree because you would like to have the best possible final result. You don't disagree just because you don't like the ideas coming from the other person. We know that when you are playful, and when there is lots of laughter, and a good mood in the project, it's helpful. Now I have to say though, be careful, because this can be too much as well. So we had once a bachelor group who failed in the bachelor thesis, and we asked them, so what went wrong? So you didn't work well together? Well, we had too much fun together. So whenever we met up, we played games and we did all this fun stuff, but we never really did the hard work. So try to balance. Being playful and have humor is good, but it shouldn't replace the hard work. So, and interpersonal conflicts are very painful, and they drain lots of energy, and they would have negative effects on some of the other parts here. So try to avoid personal conflicts. Disagreement is fine. You need disagreement. But again, the basis for disagreement is that you would like to support the other's ideas. You would like the best possible outcome, not because you don't like a person and whatever he's saying, you're going to disagree just because it's he or she. In this case, it's mostly he, I guess. And it's about exploration. Discuss this in your teams. How risk-taking are you willing to be? How much risk? Would you really go for something and saying, okay, might be 50-50, may not get there. So the integration project may fail completely. So it's a 50-50. We think this can be done, but we have no sure way of knowing. So trying to figure out what is the risk profile, how risk-seeking you are, because that's quite a lot of difference among individuals, how much risk-seeking. I climb the mountains. I tend to think that I'm not very risk-seeking anyway, but others will disagree with me, since I go up and climb in the mountains and I've been before, and if I fall, I'm going to have potentially a hard day. Allow debates to be about issues, not persons. So you focus on the tasks and the issues, and you disagree on tasks and issues, not on personal aspects. And actually, the freedom. What is your... So one is having time to come up with ideas. The other is how free you are in terms of what types of ideas you could come up with. So some companies allow their employees to have, let's say, a day or half a day a week where they can do exactly what they want. They can come up with exactly the project they want. Maybe it's going to be successful. Maybe it's going to be something that the company takes into the portfolio. Maybe it's something that the employee may develop, and either the employee or the company or both spin it off. But it's totally up to the employee what he wants to do for that time period. That is a very different way of saying, okay, now 4 hours per week, you're going to have time to come up with ideas, but the idea will have to be to improve on our product. The company could do that. And it will be a different type of frame. So again, in your case, it's to be playful and humorous, and to have the trust, you need kind of everybody to feel comfortable with your level of risk-taking and your level of freedom, and trying to find the balance between the individuals and the team. It's a good idea to discuss this, how much freedom each one need and how much risk you're willing to. So with the freedom, for instance, if you decide that, okay, one's going to work on the server side, one's going to work on the client side, would the guy working on the server side be free to do whatever, solve it in any way, or do you have certain constraints on that? Try to discuss this up front so you don't have end up with interpersonal conflicts down the line. Read the paper. I suggest it. It's quite nice, and try to set this into context and discuss some of the experiences that have been made in several projects. In studies, companies tend to be not so good on idea time and idea support, meaning that managers, they say, oh, we can't afford you spending all this time on new ideas. You need to deliver, you need to be serving the customers, you need to implement what we already agreed on. And whenever a new idea comes up, no, I don't think it works here. I think it's too hard. And trust and openness. There is, in some companies, you have these competitive aspects. So the individuals, they keep their ideas close, because if they tell some of their ideas, somebody else may take off and sell it to the manager, to the boss, as their idea. So openness can many cases be an issue, and then risk taking. They tend to be okay. Now we have this business. We need to maintain the business. We can't really go too far away from where we are because we have to maintain current business. Your case, I suggest that you have the discussion and you find where you are at, and you don't have too much history. You don't have too much legacy to take into account, so you could be quite explorative and risk-taking if you want. Questions about this? Does it seem reasonable? But we are not so good at thinking about this and talking about it. It just happens, doesn't it? So we just work, and sometimes we see, this is not the best climate, but I really understand why, and we're not thought about how it happened, how we came here. But keeping an open meta process where you try to look at, in the retrospectives, this should also be something that you think about. How are our resources for innovation? How are we personally motivated? Do we have any problems in the team right now when it comes to motivation? How explorative are we? So do that as a part of the retrospective. That might be a good idea. Okay, so that's kind of background. I suggest, although it doesn't say in the learning outcomes that you have to, but I suggest that you do do a bit of a SWOT analysis, that you do look at the climate, that you do set some rules, and you do look at this in your retrospectives. And I suggest that you do define what the goal, what the results, innovative results, what the success criteria should be. So if you do that now, then you kind of have a nice map for your project, and in May you can assess your project and you can discuss your innovation process with respect to what you already did. But what's more important, what is a real requirement, is that in your final report you do discuss and assess innovativeness. So that's kind of mandatory part. And let me just show you a couple of ways to think and to do this. One would be to think about level of innovativeness or inventiveness as a way of doing it. And the other is looking at levels of innovation. So I'll show you a couple of, I don't know if you call it rubrics, or a couple of classification systems. One is a Russian patent lawyer, Altshuler. He looked at Russian patents and he tried to say, okay, if I were to put them into a scale from level 1 to 5, where 5 is, it's just an apparent solution. It's an increment. It's a small change. It's an increment. Up to, oh, this is a great discovery. The world has never seen this before. This is going to change business totally. Like when they found the transistors and some of these really big discoveries. Now, if you look at how much, the number of solutions, the number of patents in that case, number of ideas, you find that around 1/3 would be, what you could say, would be the apparent solution. So you have a problem, and you yourself can think a way of solving the problem. It's innovative because it's not been done in your company before, but you don't really need to involve a lot of people, and it's pretty apparent. And the consequence would be, I mean, you have 10 alternatives, so there might be a small number of alternatives that will come out of this. Next level would be a minor improvement. Almost half of them is, okay, you one person can deal with it alone, but if you bring everybody together in the company, they can think of a solution. You need to have a little bit of different ideas, you need to have different levels of challenge, but together you can come up with the new solutions. And there will be more solutions to consider, but collectively you can do it within the company. Interesting. In Altshuler's work, this is almost 80% of all innovations are innovations that can be in any company with some innovative power could solve this. major improvement is where you really need the input from whole industry. It's you need much more than just your company. You need to include more. And he's classifying around 20% in that group, which means that if you add this up, you will find this is 95%. So 95% of all innovations are innovations where the knowledge is already in the industry. So if you just look at the industry, you can come up with these ideas by the knowledge that's already there in the industry. And then for 4% more, you may take ideas and knowledge in other industries and apply it in your industry. So you may say, okay, minibank is a self-service principle. And self-service was before minibanks. So now with minibanks, they started to have self-service outside of the industry into the banking industry. These kind of inventions are kind of 4%. And the final, the one that everybody's thinking of, great inventions, discoveries, it's just 1%, or even less than 1% if you look at the real numbers. I think it's 0.8% that are real new discoveries. Of course, then, there are millions of alternative or solutions that, and it will also can have an impact on many, many more products. This would typically have an impact on just a few. I mean, if you make this type of low-tech innovation, it will have an impact on just a few of your products. If you have new discoveries, it will impact a whole society. So, World Wide Web is kind of high up here. It changed. It really changed the whole world. I mean, at the time the World Wide Web came up, it was a way to look at documents. Now, I mean, all the apps, all the banking services, everything is on the web platform. So it's really at the level of discovery here. But few, 95% would be innovations or inventions where the knowledge is already there in the industry. And 99% would be the knowledge is there. You just have to look across industries, possibly. So that's one way. Now, I think from this way of classifying, we would expect you to be level one. So we will expect it to be something that you will not need to know. Maybe level two. But I think mostly level one. It's kind of an obvious invention, obvious idea. So this is one way. The other way is the Norwegian Research Council supports innovation projects, and when doing so, they have reviewers going through the ideas, and they will give them scores from 1 to 7, and where 1 is it's a project, but no significant innovation idea. 2 means that, okay, we could see it's new for the company, but it's just a minor one. It's slightly different from what you've done before. So it's new, but it's minor. Level 3, it's important and big for the company, but small for the industry. And I think that most likely you're going to be, hopefully not 1, 2 or 3. Level 4 means that it's substantial for the company, and it's the level of state of the art in the industry. It means that only the very few leading companies in the industry would have similar types of innovations at that level. And after 4, you start getting... So this means evident innovation compared to state of industry. So it means that it's among the best in the industry. And then it's an innovation at the international level, and it's a radical worldwide. So that's kind of how they ranked it from 1 to 7. So I think that when you assess your innovation, I think that you should go here a little bit, think of the the inventiveness. Think of what knowledge did you need to come up with the idea. And here, think about how significant would it be outside of your company or your team. Because that's where the difference between the three and the four is here. It's how new this would be to the whole industry. So hopefully you come with ideas that is not already known in the industry, whatever industry you choose, whether it should be, I don't know, VR or it's educational technologies or whatever. But try to be, so when you do assessment of the innovative ideas, try to be a bit specific and try to discuss time. So what is the origin of the knowledge and what's the impact? New to the team, new to the industry, new worldwide. Try to talk in these types of terms. That was the last slide, I think. Any questions? We could come back to this part when we get closer to the submission date and how a report could look like to address these issues. But for now, think about how to set the frame for this activity so that in the end you could discuss innovation process and innovation ideas, how ideas came in, and the impact of the idea for the team and for the type of industry that you represent. Okay. Let's make a 5-minute break, and then we'll do a quick review on the teams after the break.